You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Oh, away we go. Chicken Dinner Wednesday, August 4th, 2021. Follow us on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and smash the button so you get this bad boy once it drops. We will talk to Mike Helfgott, who made us more money in a draft. He did it again with the NBA draft last Thursday. Mike, very connected, and he knows how these basketball circles work. A lot of connectivity between the AAU scene, high school scene, college, and pro. There's a big web there. And if you know the right people, you get the right information, and that's what Mike does. I tailed three of his best bets in the NBA draft, two wins and one loss. I'll take it every day of the week. People get upset. Oh, Sengun. Yeah, I know. It lost. Market still moved 14.5 to 10.5. He goes over all the numbers, but the money told the story, and the money believed in the market that this kid was going to go in the lottery. It happens. I do know that Mike made 12 bets on the draft and went 10-2. So maybe I didn't make enough. Maybe I didn't tail him enough. But this guy's good at what he does. And he'll share that process with us. And also, another conversation about how tough it is for winning bettors to get down on drafts. You just can't make big bets. In the NFL, college football, college basketball, you know, these guys, they're limited if they win. But they can still get down 500 or a dime here and there. They're lucky to get $100, $150. I know guys that tried to bet Duarte under 19.5 for 500. And before the bet gets processed and submitted, the book recalibrates and says, "Oh, you know what? We're going to give you $82.50 on that bet, and we're also going to move the juice too. We're going to move it from -120 to -140 because sharp bettors, you know, that's how it goes." So we'll talk a lot about the draft coming up later on in the show with the coach, Mike Helfgott. Very, very happy with the basketball season that we had on this show. Went through the spreadsheet again this morning and just put everything together, crossed all the T's, dotted all the I's, all the wins, all the losses. In college and pro basketball combined, because we're going to be done until at least October or November, 61 wins, 48 losses, and we made 13.1 units. Hey, that's what you want. You love to see that. And another great NBA postseason. I'm never going to sit here and throw darts in the NBA regular season because I think it's impossible. For me, it's not a strength. In the playoffs, though, when you get to some of the zigzag stuff, some of the player props, go back to the Trae Young stuff, and series bets. When a team goes down 1-0, 2-0, you can find that dog at a really good price and put yourself in a good situation. I love betting the NBA postseason, and I love betting from February through March in college basketball. You're not always going to go 61 and 48. That's a pretty small sample size, I would argue. I mean, it's just over 100 games. That's not a lot, but we'll take it, and we move on. A lot like the Los Angeles Lakers have moved on from their awful roster, and now LeBron all of a sudden needs more help, and he gets more help. I love looking at the team LeBron gets to, like that first season in Miami, first season, second time around in Cleveland, first season in Los Angeles, and how that team had a lot of assets and young players, prospects. You know what happens. All these guys get flipped, whether it's Wiggins in Cleveland or, you know, guys like Lonzo Ball in Los Angeles. It always is the same pattern. LeBron realizes he wants vets. He wants guys that he can rely on. The team gets older, and then he eventually leaves. I don't think he's going to leave the Lakers for another team, but you look at this roster now. Good Lord, the age of some of these guys. Marc Gasol, Dwight Howard, Carmelo Anthony, Trevor Ariza. LeBron's not getting any younger. You know, they get Russell Westbrook. How many great years does he have left? Wayne Ellington's up there. Anthony Davis can't stay on the floor. I don't know that they win the title, but they're certainly priced that way. So LeBron gets what he wants. He always does. This team will contend. I have no idea if they're good enough. We need to see them play together. But this is, again, the power that this guy has had for a long period of time. When he left Cleveland, after he left Miami to go to Cleveland to come home, and there's no place like Cleveland, and then he leaves again for Los Angeles, that Cleveland team, the team that he built with Kyrie and Kevin Love, they all leave, and then the team is in the toilet. That's going to happen again in Los Angeles, but that's the price you pay for chasing rings with a superstar and the superstar in the league. Starting lineup looks like this next year. Russell Westbrook, Malik Monk, LeBron, AD, Dwight Howard. Here's the reality of the situation in the NBA. There are two destination teams now where players will flock to win rings. Brooklyn and Los Angeles. That's it. Look no further than two additions the Lakers have made with Kent Bazemore and Alphonso McKinney. Former Golden State Warriors. Leaving money on the table, leaving years on the deal to try and win a championship. Shams Charania, great NBA insider. He talked about on Twitter how Bazemore turned down more money and more life on the contract from Golden State because he believes he'll have a bigger role and an opportunity to win a championship. The Warriors were that destination. When they had guys like Steph and Klay and Draymond, and they were all healthy and they were playing together, guys wanted to go there because they wanted to win. Kevin Durant, prime example. I'm going to go here, I'm going to win a couple rings, then I'm going to leave. Now, the destination cities, or the destination teams for that matter, are the Nets and the Lakers. And look at these betting boards. Look at the prices here. I pulled up OddsBoom. Those of you that don't know OddsBoom, check it out. It's a great tool to compare a lot of these American books. So I pulled up OddsBoom.com, went to NBA Futures, and I have columns for all these books. MGM, DraftKings, FanDuel, Tipico, Borgata, WinBet, Hard Rock, PointsBet. More books will get added as they put up their outs, or their markets for that matter. It's the Nets, the Lakers, and everybody else. The Nets as low as plus 210, as high as plus 230. That's it. Lakers, obviously, second, as low as plus 295, as high as plus 450, and then you go down to the Bucks, and it's mostly 8 or 9 to 1. Pretty noticeable drop between 1, 2, and 3. Warriors about 10 to 1, Suns 14, 15, Jazz, you got a couple 16s in there, same with Philly, Clippers more toward 18, but the books are just bracing for that money on Brooklyn and Los Angeles. You're not going to get a deal on those two teams. The books know that the public's still going to bet them anyways. I feel very, very nervous about our NL MVP bets on Fernando Tatis Jr. There's a chance he comes back. There's a chance he goes under the knife and doesn't play again the rest of this season. These injuries to Jacob deGrom and Tatis Jr. have shaken up the entire NL MVP market. And now the guessing game is on. Books have no idea the seriousness of the injury to Tatis Jr. Chase Tingler, the manager, said, yeah, the plan is to play. But if he doesn't improve, he's going to be off of the season. What? Okay. We're sitting here holding future bets on Tatis at plus 850. Some of you boosted it to 10, 11, 12 to 1. Great bet, given the circumstances. On August 4th, he's the betting favorite. I pulled up FanDuel. Tatis Jr. right now, minus 115. 115 and win 100. Turner, 450. Muncy, 450. Freeman, 7-1. Then a big drop. Harper, 30. Machado, 50. DeGrom, 50. Of course, these prices are different at all of these books. But there are a handful of books that aren't even going to take bets on this anymore because they're just too liable. People have bet Turner, Muncy, Freeman, 30-1 or higher. Some guys got Freeman at 50. Some guys got Muncy at 100-1. They're not trying to write any more bets because they're going to lose in a variety of ways. If DeGrom wins the award, these books are cooked, but it's clear he's not winning, and that's why they're giving you 50-1. If you're looking at that and going, wow, what a price on DeGrom. He's not winning. He's not going to pitch again until mid-September at the earliest. Don't bet on DeGrom. It's over. The books are admitting it's over by moving him from minus 15 or minus 10 to 30, 40, 50 to 1. They didn't say it, but they're saying it with the price. And I'll tell you what, if Tatis gets ruled out for the season in the coming days, you're going to see Turner, Muncy, Freeman shorten even more. But you're not even gambling on anything tangible. You're guessing if Tatis is healthy. It's not really a handicap. You're just trying to get ahead of the move. So I guess my point is, if you think Tatis is either not playing again this season or he's going to re-injure himself, now would be the time to bet on some of these other cats. You could find Turner 5-6-1. Same with Muncy. You could find Freeman at 8-1. I am going to hope that Tatis stays healthy. I was actually really excited, a week ago, 10 days ago. I'm like, man, I feel great about this Tatis bet. And over the weekend, he just tries to slide into third, and that shoulder pops, and he's in pain, writhing on the ground, and that's where it's at. You can't, as a bookmaker, have any sense of what's going to happen next with Tatis. I'm hoping for the best, but my fingers are crossed. Let's see. Oh, Indianapolis Colts. Carson Wentz, Quentin Nelson, both hurt. Wentz out indefinitely with a foot injury, 5 to 12 weeks. And then Quentin Nelson gets the same injury. He's out 5 to 12 weeks. So the Colts will be down starting quarterback, starting left tackle, starting left guard for the foreseeable future. And 7 of the team's first 8 opponents are actually favored to make the playoffs. The yes, no, the make, miss, favored to make the playoffs. That win total still up at a couple shops, over under 9 wins, juice to the under, plus money on the over. I don't like Tennessee. I'm sort of low on them. Houston is going to fucking suck. And Jacksonville has a rookie quarterback and a rookie NFL head coach. Frank Reich is an awesome coach, but it's tough to scheme when you can't protect the quarterback. And now you're talking about Jacob Eason and Sam Ellinger. Todd Dewey from the RJ in Vegas, at TDewey33. After the Colts lost Carson Wentz, Superbook Sports moved Indy from 25-1 to 40-1 to win the Super Bowl. And to win the AFC, 12-1 to 20-1. This is going to be a weird NFL season. We'll talk about this more with John Murray on the next episode of Chicken Dinner, all the uncertainties. And a lot of these books now, they're not going to even take season-long props. Yeah, you might get them at DraftKings and FanDuel and PointsBet and all that. You're not going to get big limits. You can't lay down a big bet. There's no need for a lot of these sports books to take season-long bets, because guys that know what they're doing are going to just play unders. Injuries or COVID tracing. A guy misses a game or two because of COVID tracing, he's not going to hit his prop. So these books are like, all right, cool. We're just not going to deal season-long props. I'm talking the exotic markets where they give you over-unders on passing yards, rushing yards, receiving yards, touchdown catches. You'll get the regular props, the week-to-week stuff, and you'll still have markets like MVP, Coach of the Year, Rookie of the Year. That stuff is easier to maneuver. But if you put up a player prop on Aaron Rodgers or Davante Adams or whatever, and those guys miss a game or two games, these props are going under. So the books want no part of this song and dance over the course of a 17-game regular season. It's not as simple as it's been in years past. Taking averages and just going through and adding the average to a 17th game and just hoping for the best. There are too many roadblocks with these props, and you're going to see less and less. Caesars Sports has announced the launch of its new sports betting app, a new nationwide marketing campaign featuring J.B. Smoove. I love that guy. He's so funny. So he's now pushing the brand, floating the product out there for Caesars. And Ryan Butler added this. He's from the Action Network, doing a great job covering sports betting in the landscape. With its William Hill integration complete, Caesars now expects to spend more than $1 billion on customer acquisition over the next 2+ years to target players for its growing digital casino and sports betting business. That according to CEO Tom Brieg. $1 billion they're going to spend on recruiting you. They want you to sign up for their app, to get the promotion, to get the deposit bonus, to play in their casino. They want you, and they're going to go above and beyond to spend enough money to get into your ears or get on your smartphone where you can see the brand and you can see JB Smoove and go, oh, I like JB Smoove. I'll bet with Caesars. Oh, they're going to give me a $1,000 risk bet. That's all these companies have been doing since sports betting went live. PASPA goes down May 2018. These books have been in a race to get you. What can we do for you? And I saw Station Casinos, they're now offering in Vegas a referral bonus or a sign-up bonus where they're going to give you, I think it's $500 if you sign up with Station Casinos. Vegas books don't do, they never had to do that because that was the only game in town. If you wanted to bet sports, you had to go to Vegas. So now Stations with new management, they're joining the club, the bonus club. Here's what you get when you sign up. Here's a perk for you. I like perks. Okay, well, there you go. Caesars are going to spend $1 billion. And they just spent a lot of money to be the title sponsor of the New Orleans Superdome. Hey, pay attention. Think it's the first deal like that? Nope. AL East is a roller coaster right now. And I wrote about this for Nesson. This is a fluid market. Red Sox were a small favorite 7-10 days ago, and now they've had a 5-game losing streak. So they're in second place. And, of course, the money and the market has reacted. Now, there's a lot of books that are liable on Tampa because they had that stretch, I think middle May, early June, where they went 17-3. And a lot of people were like, oh, I like Tampa to win this division. And they just popped them. Then the Rays got cold. Then the Red Sox were the team of the month. Rays and Red Sox, I still think, are interchangeable in that division. Both teams should make the playoffs. I was looking at the Baseball Reference playoff projections. They give the Rays a 70% chance to win the division. So they're higher on the Rays than most. Red Sox, 22%. Blue Jays, 7%. Yankees, 1%. But to make the postseason, Rays, 96%. Red Sox, 79%. Look at the market, though. You can find much better prices on the Blue Jays over the Yankees. I don't like either team. Toronto, 7 games back. Yankees, 6 games back. The metrics say the Blue Jays are a better team. And I like the addition of Jose Berríos a whole lot. They've got a better lineup, top to bottom, from my perspective. That's a better team. But the Yankees always sell, and people bet the Yankees. You could find Blue Jays 18-1 at DraftKings. Highest number on the Yankees, 10-1. And now, as I always say, you buy at the right time. Red Sox have lost 5 in a row. Most people aren't going to want to log into their app and go, oh, I like the Red Sox. They're going to bet the Rays now because the Rays are better. They're a game up. The Rays could fall apart. So could the Red Sox. It's baseball. I still think both teams are going to be in a dogfight. September 15th, they're going to be within a game or two of each other. That's my perception. I stand by what I said last week. I would not bet the Yankees or the Blue Jays to win the division. But this thing is extremely fluid. Now you can find the Red Sox at plus 155 at FanDuel. You couldn't find any pluses a week ago. And really nothing changed. They had a tough stretch. They lost 5 in a row. Starting pitching, starting to be a concern, but you know, this stuff is cyclical. And I think Chris Sale is going to be a boon for this group. He comes back and puts everybody into their respective slots. Is he coming in with high expectations? Yes. Is he the white horse? Got to be. But this is Tampa and Boston still making the playoffs. You just have to figure out when to bet the right team. You could have bet the Rays at plus 140, 150 a week ago. Now the Rays are minus 120. It's just, what have you done for me lately? And that's how these future markets work. Last thing, the Cubs are dead. And this is a team that I was around so much. out of college and through my first 5 or 6 years covering sports in Chicago. I was there in 2012 when they lost over 100 games. Actually, there was a game in late September. The Astros and the Cubs were both at 100 losses. They were going to the bottom. And in 2012, they call up Anthony Rizzo at 22 years old. I was there when Rizzo was there. That team stunk. And when Rizzo was there, they were struggling to win games. I mean, they were lucky to win series. And the progression that they had over all those years, when they bring up Javi Baez in 2014, Addison Russell, Chris Bryant, Kyle Schwarber in 2015, they bring up Wilson Contreras. They start signing guys like John Lester. They trade for Jake Arrieta. That Arrieta trade was insane. Scott Feldman and Steve Clevenger for Jake Arrieta? Come on. They traded for Kyle Hendricks. They got him out of Texas. That team was so good for so long, and now it's over. And we talked about this on this program before the season started. This team was always going to sell. Some of you got in on under 79.5 or under 80 wins or whatever. There wasn't a book that had anything higher than 81. I know it was mostly just under 500. The way they treated Rizzo when they just completely lowballed him in negotiation talks. I covered that story for WGN. I remember somebody in Rizzo's camp was like, hey, he's pissed. I said, well, hey, I can help. And that was when Paul Goldschmidt had just got 5 years and I think 130 or 140 million. They offered Rizzo 4 years and nothing even close to that. And they expected him to take a team deal. Thing is, he took a team deal a long time ago, and he was looking for his. I don't blame the guy at all. He signed that extension, when was it, 2013, I think? He signed a 7-year contract for, I don't know, $60 million or something like that. And it was a great deal for the team at the time. When it came time to giving him a Brent Seabrook-type deal or a Duncan Keith-type deal, they said no. I think fundamentally Jed Hoyer made the right business decision because now Theo's gone and the honeymoon is long over. Jed's got to rebuild this team in his likeness. And if you look around the infield, he's going to have Nico Hoerner at short. He's going to have Nick Madrigal at second. He'll find power at the corners. Maybe Patrick Wisdom is a long-term guy. But this Cub team is not going to go over their win total. You can forget about the postseason. This team is on the way down now. Record 51-57. 13 games out, 10.5 out of the wild card. It's over. It's over. But I go back and think about covering that team and seeing the maturation and the growth from them losing 100 in 2012 to being contenders in 15, World Series champs in 16, made it to the NLCS in 17. They fired Joe Maddon. They start dealing guys. David Ross, never managed before. Yeah, he'll be fine. I can't believe the window closed as quickly as it did. And that'll be very interesting to see what the number is next year for season wins. They pretty much told you, Vegas told you they knew it was going to happen. When they put a number 79.5, they're telling you this is not going to be a good team. And a lot of people, wow, that's free money. They've got all these guys on expiring contracts, and they're going to play for their, you know, for their next deal. We tried to tell you they're going to get rid of all these guys because the pitching staff is not good. That was Theo's problem. He was never able to draft and develop pitchers ever in Chicago. Made good trades, made big signings, but they could never develop pitching. And all these hitters did a lot of the same things. Didn't walk a lot. Boom or bust. Lots of strikeouts. Leave guys on base. That team is going to reinvent itself, and Jed is tasked with a very tall order. You have to replace the man that just broke the curse. Just crazy to think that they still only got one.
Joining us again on Chicken Dinner, I actually believe he's the most common guest over the last 8 months. I don't know how that happened, but when you keep dominating the draft, I guess that gives us a little bit of an explanation. Mike Helfgott joining us at M. Helfgott. You did it again, pal. I think you only personally lost, what, one draft pick?
One player, two bets with the same player.
And that was a guy we'll get into, Sengun, who his stock went one way, but then he slid the other. That's more than okay because, again, you have made this audience money. And before we give you, you know, the victory lap and all that, which you very well deserve, can you explain the importance of not betting day of the draft or days before the draft? This is another draft where you've been hitting this stuff weeks out.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's not something that needs to be followed year round. I think at that point, that's probably overkill. But I think I got on, I think I started really getting involved. And the biggest thing I do is I listen to podcasts. There's just so much great information out there, so many plugged in reporters, and I'll get into that in a second. But yeah, so I started as soon as the tournament ended is when I started. And the importance of doing that is, you know, the information I talked about comes from these guys who, basketball is not that hard to scout. It's not like football. So these guys understand scouting and they're reporters and they're plugged in and they cover the draft year round. So initially you're getting their thoughts, really their thoughts in that buzz. And you see it as a change by getting in early. When there's a change, when someone starts rising, you're right there. The books can't possibly keep up with all these moves. And by just keeping yourself informed of the latest podcasts, the latest articles, and there's several guys, I think, that are really, really good at this, you're ready. When there's a change, you understand that there was a change, and you're then waiting to hear more. If one guy says it, you're waiting for another guy to say it. And if all of a sudden multiple people are talking about the same guy rising, what we found out, Sam, the last couple of years is there's an overwhelming chance that that information is correct.
You texted me on Friday, July 16th at 11 o'clock in the morning Eastern, Chris Duarte minus 135 to be drafted ahead of Trey Mann. And you said, I love Duarte, but the reporting I trust backs up the bet. He's probably a good bet to go ahead of Springer minus 15, but I decided to throw it all on this one instead. Duarte minus 135. At that point, Mike, his player prop for position was 21.5. Didn't it close at like 14.5?
It did, and it still went under.
He goes 13th to the Pacers, yeah.
This was a case a little bit different than what I do with football in that I already love this player. And I, you know, I think most people that are really into basketball feel like they have a sense for how to scout, what scouts are looking for. I'm not saying I'm a trained scout by any stretch of the imagination, but this is a player I already loved. This is a player when I first heard was being talked about late first round. I said, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. This guy's great. And then as I heard buzz that it was more getting into the teens, it was no problem for me to believe it. And there are other reasons why it was no problem for me to believe it. But this was a guy, I said, yeah, this absolutely makes sense. I love this guy. And I did go on Springer and I did play him under. Some of these bets are just worth hammering.
How did they get it so wrong? I know that's not easy for you to answer because you're not behind the counter. You're not working in the trade room. But they got it wrong, number one. And number two, they were so slow to adjust because you send this 2 weeks before the draft. I want to say the following Wednesday, it was about 18.5. So it still goes down five more slots in the coming yeah. week. How do they adjust so slow?
Well, a couple things on that. I don't think they got it wrong. This was a unique situation. This is a player that's 24 years old. He might be, and I'm not sure on this, the oldest player ever drafted in the lottery because he ended up going 13. So when these guys are making their projections before head coaches get involved, before they're really hearing straight from general managers about who teams might take, it was reasonable to assume this was a late first round guy because of the team's patterns. But as the draft drew nearer, and this is what I'm saying about the quality of this information that comes out, as the draft drew nearer, it became clear to these analysts that in this case, the age wasn't going to hold this guy back because too many teams really liked him.
What's the biggest difference when you do all your homework and your research and you're listening to podcasts and you're poring over Twitter? What's the biggest difference between the NBA draft and the NFL draft?
they're similar. I think one, the biggest difference, and I think you might be leading me in a different direction, so I'll give you that answer as well. But the biggest difference is so much less buzz on Twitter. It's just, I don't know if it's just who I follow, but I didn't get, I would say, a quarter of the amount of stuff that was going on with the football draft. Did you notice that as well?
I thought it was glaringly different, to be honest.
Yeah, it really was. So I enjoyed that, frankly. The other thing, I think it's, I mean, I football is great, and I do trust the information. There's a couple guys with basketball. Let me talk about my background a little bit. As you know, I covered high school sports, high school basketball intensely in Chicago for about a decade. Also, you know, did some college stuff, did some pro stuff as well. And what that's not what gives me a leg up, but it does allow me to trust the information, I think, more than most. And here's why. Not just because I have a sense from being, and I was a sports writer for 20 years, I have maybe a sense for what's legitimate and what maybe isn't, and have a good ear for where this information is actually coming from. But I think that's secondary to just trusting basketball, because basketball is one world. It's one community. It all intersects, because the NBA, they are scouting high school players from the time that they're probably sophomores and juniors, even when buzz starts. And all of these different levels of basketball intersect over the summer in AAU tournaments, in all of the major all-star games and events. All of the NBA people are there. College people are around, high school people are around. It's one community of people. And I'm not saying I was ever totally, totally plugged in, but I certainly had sources that were. And I saw the speed with which you can gather information if you needed something. And these people, most importantly, build super strong relationships with each other, because the dynamic is set up that makes it very easy. They see each other all the time. And these draft reporters in particular, they cover this stuff year round. They're at events with other guys. Point is, they build these really strong relationships, and I get it. And when these people are on these podcasts and they're writing these articles, and these are known reporters, and they're telling you that this information is coming from people that they trust because these people never lie to them and they've got these relationships with them, well, I'm here to tell you that you should believe them. And, you know, and we see the way it plays out. Basketball in particular, it is one world. It is one universe. And it's very easy for these people to build relationships with each other and trust each other. And I think that's a big reason why so much great information was coming out.
There's a gentleman that I met when I was about 25. I think he was 21. I think we're about 4 years apart. I was calling UIC Flames basketball, and this kid comes to a game, UIC against Loyola. I don't know him. He doesn't know me. He's still in college. I introduce myself. He goes, "Hi, I'm Sham Sharania."
Yep.
And this is a guy who was covering the local Chicago AAU scene, and then he was just dipping his toe in the college basketball waters, and he's not covering the ACC or the Big East. You know, he's in the Horizon League. I think Loyola at that time had shifted over to the Missouri Valley, but he's used all of his connections from the Chicago high school scene into the college scene, and now he's one of the top guys in the pros. So you're right. It's different. You couldn't do that. You couldn't go from covering high school football to covering the NFL in two seasons.
It's all relationships, and it's all one world. And Shams in particular, I can't even wrap my head around his ascension. It makes my head hurt to think how he even did that. But that just goes to show you that basketball world. And what about Woj? Is there a better, more plugged-in reporter of anything in the world than Woj?
They hadn't even made the first pick yet, and he was announcing the seventh pick. I don't know how.
Almost like he's the czar of basketball, and nothing happens until he signs off on it.
You actually texted me, too. You're like, "Hey, no spoilers. I'm not watching the draft." And then we had Sengun, who, you know, he went from 13.5 to about, I think, a global shot.
Well, he started at 14.5.
And then a global shop had hit 10.5 by draft day. And he ends up going over all those numbers, which was surprising to me. What did you hear about his fall?
Well, I'm not sure it was a fall. I think that loss, while it still does stick in my craw because it was the difference between 10-2 and 12-0 for me.
Oh, woe is you.
Well, that's a big ROI difference, though. It really is.
Yeah.
You're right, though. Woe is me. So I did some introspection, and I did identify a difference between the Sengun bet and the rest of them. So I played six guys total. I had Duarte. I had Zaire Williams, Trey Murphy, De'Ron Sharp. Those were all unders. And I had a Joel Ayayi over. Mm-hmm. So those other bets were all strictly information bets. Like I was really confident when I played a number that there was no way this guy was getting past a certain number. Like I told you, we use Trey Murphy for an example. I told you to hit it when it was 17 and a half, but then it fell to 16 and a half. And I told you not to, because I really felt like he wasn't getting past 17. 17 was the line. We had that number with Duarte. We knew the Knicks would take him at 19. There was solid information on that. Similar for the other guys. De'Ron Sharp with the Nets, which where he ended up going. We had solid information linking them to a specific team. With Sengun, we really didn't have that. I convinced myself, and other analysts convinced themselves, without sourcing information, that the Spurs would never, that he'd never get past the Spurs. But there wasn't actually reporting on that the way there was with the other guys. So maybe it's, let's stick to the reporting and not stick to, you know, and try to stay away from the conjecture as much as you can.
But it's easy to convince yourself on that because you think about some of the bigger names that San Antonio has taken, Tony Parker from France, Manu Ginobili from Argentina. So that sort of helps you get to that understanding and get to that position.
The way I look at that, though, it's different. Like, if I was trying to go 55% like I am against the spread, then it's a good play. But the draft is different. You're not trying to go 55% because you're getting – people are telling you what's going to happen. So, you know, 55% is not acceptable. I mean, we've seen it now. I've done this for four drafts, two NFL and two pro, and we're way above 55%.
Wow. And I still think it's amazing that you go 10-2 in the draft, and I – completely took three of our draft picks solely from you, and I will give you credit until I'm blue in the face. You know, to go 10-2 and still not seem, well, I don't want to say you're not satisfied, but you're still kind of pissed off that you missed one.
Like I said, this, it's all there for me. If I'm disciplined and I stick strictly to solid information rather than trying to conjecture. The NFL, I didn't mind. I think it was 26-17, but I did a lot of locking in on profit. That just didn't seem necessary here. I'm curious, have you spoken with bookmakers? I mean, did they take a hit?
Well, most of the ones that are in Vegas, they didn't even do shit until the day of the draft or day before the draft. I'll tell you who got cooked, DraftKings and FanDuel.
FanDuel barely had anything.
They got cooked, though, because they started taking them early. Like, I think any book that takes draft bets early. You're right, they didn't have the variety that DraftKings had. But DK got worked in the draft.
Yeah, I believe it. And, in fact, that's another reason. That reminds me. The other reason to really get started early with studying this stuff, and I think after the draft is fine, is you don't know when they're going to post stuff. So the minute they post stuff, you're ready. And that's why we got in on that Duarte Trey Mann stuff, is I was ready for it.
You took that off the board. That was all you. It was your fault. And then I was getting shit indirectly because some guy was like, you missed the move. I'm like, it moved 10 cents.
Dude. I saw that.
And then they take it off the board. You know, it was, you sent me the note on Friday, minus 135. On Tuesday, I'm back from vacation. I tweet out 45. Within a week, it's $2, two and a quarter. And then PointsBet just said, you know what? Fuck it. We're not even taking any more bets on this.
And then the really funny thing is that man went way higher than anybody projected. He went 18.
I know the other part of this, too, is that books were nervous of the middle with a guy like Duarte, who, as you mentioned, he still went under all those numbers. But I think you take a book like DraftKings, who was dealing Duarte two weeks before the draft at 21.5, and then day of the draft, they're at, what, 14.5, and then you got guys that are just trying to clobber a middle. I guess clobber's the wrong word because, full disclosure, I know guys that do this for a living. Mike, they couldn't get down 100, 200 bucks on the draft.
That's the point. They're just not going to let themselves get beat too bad.
Yeah, nobody's taking big bets. You know, my buddy Vegas Rick, he tries to bet a nickel on Duarte under 20.5, and they corrected the wager to $20, and then they moved the position a full draft slot.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, you know, all these books talk about taking bets and being first to market and all that, but really, that's the biggest issue with the NBA draft and the NFL draft. Guys that win, they can't get down.
Yeah. And I imagine they're not getting any two-way action, right? Like, nobody's betting Duarte over. Maybe at the end they're trying to middle, but for the most part, they're getting totally one-way.
And nobody is betting – nobody from the general public, I guess I should say, is betting this stuff weeks out like you are or like I am. They're betting it Wednesday night, or they wake up Thursday and go, oh, the draft's tonight.
You know, there's such little else going on. I mean, I guess – I think baseball, you have to be a devoted baseball bettor or not bet it at all. And then it's the NBA playoffs is going on, but it's there's no football to study. Like, the, you know, it's the time to do it, something like this. Time to specialize.
I want to take you out with this. NFL is coming up. We got about a month or so, call it 5 weeks, before the NFL regular season. Have you done anything – future-wise or season win total-wise, there's a lot of murkiness in the water.
Yeah, you know, I prepared and I looked at the screen carefully, all my different sites for futures plays, and I haven't actually pulled the trigger on anything because when COVID started picking up and with these restrictive rules, I mean, there's so much unknown. There's so much uncertainty. There's so much variance right now. You know, I think if you're looking to play things, look for unders to play. Particularly on the player side, player props. I mean, I feel like you could just take every under, every offering if you had an unlimited bankroll and you would clean up. Because for guys to hit their numbers individually, they've got to stay healthy and they've got to have good seasons. They've got to play 15, you know, at least 15 games in most cases. And that just, and they have to have good seasons. Like for both, you know, is that really going to happen for over 45% of the players? I don't think so.
Yeah, I was actually having a conversation last week on the show. I'm like, how does Davante Adams go under 11 touchdown catches? And then I just thought to myself, COVID.
Or he gets hurt.
Or he gets, well, right.
Levin's still a high number. I mean, that thing him and Rodgers have at the one-yard line. I was listening to a fantasy podcast yesterday, and they were like, oh, Rodgers had 8 one-yard touchdowns. That's not repeatable. It's like, do you watch the games? They can't stop that play.
And why run the ball when you've got a guy that big that could just make a man miss? And
him and Rodgers, I mean, they got some voodoo shit going on, right? Like, they know. They can read. They're on the same page. They read things the same.
I saw one tweet that made me laugh out loud. It was Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. And he was, you know, he's very sarcastic and dry. And he said something to the extent of, I want to take every win total under. And he's got a PhD in math, so obviously he's kidding. You've got to go over somewhere. But that was his stance, that he can't get to any win total overs.
Yeah, I mean, the teams I liked a little bit, I like Washington, but that was before learning that almost half their players aren't vaccinated. And if Bridgewater wins that Denver job, and I know this is sort of a sexy pick, but – Fangio is such a good coach, and they are loaded on defense, right? I mean, the secondary, Fangio. Remember what a big drop-off the Bears had when Fangio left?
I remember David Kaplan telling me it wasn't a big deal. The defense.
Well, there you go. That's all you need to know.
He said there's no difference between Fangio and Chuck Pagano, and I almost tackled him on the set.
Fangio is so good, you know, and they've really got a lot of weapons. That's a team that I might play – the alternate win total. Like, that's a team I can see, you know, getting some mojo.
The man does his homework. He always has, and he has carved himself a very strong niche in the draft markets, NBA draft, NFL draft. Give him a follow. He's probably made you money, whether you realize it or not, at M. Helfgott. Coach, killed it again, man. I wish we had a draft every month.
Oh, me too. Well, actually, that might be a little much, Coach. I got to get some work done.
Thanks for coming on, man.
All right.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Mike Helfgott for hopping on the show. We will definitely talk to him again ahead of the NFL draft next spring, and we'll make some more money. That's the plan, at least, in all the drafts coming down the pipeline in the future. Record check 156, 151, and 5. We're down a little bit, 1.8, and we've got the two pending plays. I don't know what Kirk Cousins' status is now. I'm getting more nervous by the day about Vikings at plus 250 or 60 to win the North. Whatever is what it is. Coming up on Chicken Dinner, the next episode, we will have John Murray from the Westgate Superbook on the program. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next time right here on Chicken Dinner. Broken.
So, and tell-